Spanish and posted online at democracynow.org. That does it for our show. I'll be tonight at the IFC Center after the 6 o'clock screening of the film about Democracy Now! Steal the Story, Please. I'll be there with the director, Tia Lesson, and with V, formerly known as Eve Ensler. Tomorrow I'll also be there for a Q&A after the 6 o'clock screening at IFC Center with our own Democracy Now! Co-host, Nermeen Sheikh, and the director, Tia Lesson. Then to Boulder and Denver, check our website.
Rectangular, rapid flashing beacons are warning devices at pedestrian crossings. Maintaining safety at these crossings is the responsibility of both pedestrians and drivers. Be watchful when you see a pedestrian beacon and look for approaching pedestrians, even when the lights are dark. A pedestrian should push the button to activate the signal. When the lights begin flashing, indicate you intend to cross by carefully stepping into the crosswalk. The flashing lights are meant to catch a motorist's attention. When you see them, it means a pedestrian is trying to cross. Be prepared to yield to pedestrians in the crosswalk. Allow pedestrians to completely cross the road, whether or not the lights are still flashing. When pedestrians and motorists follow the rules of the road, everyone can stay safe.
And while you're carefully following the rules of the road, hopefully you're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM, 107.3 FM, and over the internet at WUSB.FM. It's 6 o'clock on a Tuesday, time for another exciting edition of Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you tonight, joined by Kyle.
Indeed, delighted. Hi.
It's really, really hot today. And it's really hot in the studio, which is always pleasant. So as we sweat up a storm here, we're going to try and calmly sum up all the fun things that have happened in the last week. Maybe have some surprises. We'll see about that. How are you, Kyle?
Oh, how? Wow. I'm taking care of myself. I'm hanging in there. I'm a little exhausted. I think I exerted myself. I got kind of distracted with all kinds of things. I tend to do a bunch of things at once and, you know, finish certain things that have, you know, been nagging. And I feel accomplished, but...
Changing oil in the car.
Oh, I got all kinds of things. I'm
planting
little...
seeds, transplanting
I did.
Things.
I did the wildflowers.
Making a huge compost pile.
I do have a pile.
Doing a lot of paperwork. There's catching paperwork, up on letters and phone calls.
Sure.
And basically fixing things that break. That's just in an hour.
Yeah, I mean, we could keep going, but I'm a little sore. My shoulder's a little sore, but that's cool because I know I was out doing stuff. The thing is, when I get a little, like, ache or something, I'm like, what crazy wild chore or task was I doing where I injured myself? It's like this bruise, like that bruise. What was that lift? I was lifting a window air conditioner or something.
I injured myself just now trying to open the window because it was locked.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I didn't know it was locked. I pushed.
Do you need triage?
It already hurt, but now it hurts more. At least it's getting a little bit cooler here. You know, getting down into the 90s again would be nice.
How are you?
I'm a little frenzied. A lot of things going on. A lot of chores and tasks and commitments. But nothing surprising, you know, it's what I expected.
You seem to be fighting things at a normal rate, not any more than usual.
I'm fighting technology because, I just lost access to a computer that I can get access again, but it's just came at the worst possible time where I'm trying to grab something off a machine and all of a sudden the video just flips out and I can't do anything until it calms down. It's going to take about an hour and I don't have that time.
Hey, yes. We're here. It's going to be fine. We're on the radio. We're talking to so many different people going through similar struggles, and that's fine. Just let it alone.
Who else is on the radio going through similar struggles?
Well, everyone out there, I mean, has some annoyance and the like. So it'll be okay. You don't need that. We'll figure out something to do instead.
If you're listening to us, you definitely have an annoyance. And we will be that annoyance for the next hour or so.
Yeah, it's as our duty here at WSB Stony Brook.
That's right.
Broadcasting from Stony Brook University.
Where people will be graduating soon.
I hear that's coming up. There's some kind of broadcast, a lot of celebrations, a lot of events. I'm sure everyone's planning and getting ready, packing their bags and... charting the course, I guess, for their futures, with their families, with their life goals. Fantastic time of
good
year.
Luck with that. Seriously, all the luck in the world for the society that's out there waiting for you.
Yes, definitely behave. Just be reasonable. Follow all of the instructions you're given. Don't ask too many questions.
Don't ask questions.
Don't ask any.
Get you in trouble.
Yeah, and, be thankful for everything constantly. Great gratitude. You know, switch back and forth between gratitude and thankfulness and, humble your humbleness.
No, keep going. I want to see where this lands.
Yeah, like, be humble how humble you
don't
are.
Don't ask questions. Be forever thankful.
Yeah.
And now be humble as well.
Yes. And, right? And,
keep going. You're on a roll.
Mm-hmm. Conform as much as possible.
Oh, yeah,
you want to be
conformity.
Like everyone. Don't deviate.
And if you listen to WUSB, you know what conformity is, and you've already conformed. So we take pride in our listeners conforming. Certainly our staff has mastered that. I think that's pretty much, there's more. There's more.
We have all the tooling. You're proverbially like injection molded here at Stony Brook. And we peel back the tool, out you come. We trim off the rough edges, polish you down, And out you go into the world. Okay. You're ready.
Don't read from the student.
You're a fine product.
Reading from the student handbook, we're supposed to be, you know, talking ourselves, you know, spontaneously.
Oh,
not
right.
Word for word reading.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I'll just. You know what? You go ahead with the first story. I'll come back to that. Figure out a way to maybe close it off.
You think there's a first story. That's funny.
Yeah. This is why I have to get up earlier. I have to start going into the recording closet. And
that's what it is.
Yeah. That's, with all the heavy coats. And, I'll just do kind of like stream of mouth.
I just got a bulletin on my phone.
Yeah. It'll be like Slam Kyle.
A Trump critic is trying to hang on in Kentucky. You know what? We'll get to that later.
Did you hear that?
It's just insane.
Everybody's like going wild. Apparently it's like this kind of like Rand Paul type.
Uh-huh. Another one?
And ousted. Yeah, I don't even know. You're going to have to get to that.
He annoys me, but sometimes he stands up for the right thing. Sometimes.
That's the Massey thing.
Okay. Well, I don't know who Massey is. I mean, I should know who Massey is. But I know that this is somebody who butted heads with Trump and is now fighting for his life in Kentucky. Well, you know, that's the thing. We treat it like he's fighting for his life, and he's fighting for a job. And if he doesn't get this job, he'll get another job. He'll be on MS Now and, you know, giving pundit commentary or whatever. It's not the end of the world.
Incredibly accurate, yes. And the most important thing, or the subtext here, is that there are a bunch of elections today. Yes, around the country, there are various state elections going on. And these are the types of races. People are following them. They're keeping up with, what different jurisdictions are thinking and how they're voting.
There's a contentious election going on in Stony Brook about funding museums. And you see signs everywhere saying, say yes to funding the museums. And right next to it is a sign saying, say no to funding the museum. I don't know who did this, but they planted all the signs, one right next to the other. So either it's a really tight race, or somebody has both signs, or one of the sides isn't doing the work and is just putting signs where the other side already put signs. I don't know, but we'll have the results sometime tonight, and I don't know who is going to be telling you those results, because I'm not sure how many people care. Probably not here on USB. I don't think we have local election results that often. I'm pretty sure News 12 won't care at all. Wander around town and just ask people, I guess, is probably the best way.
Correct. Or you can look at returns from local election boards. I think they have information on their sites.
I wish I knew what those sites were.
You know, it's just hitting me the first wave of heat exhaustion.
Yeah, that's what's going to do us in.
You feel that?
I've been feeling it for quite a while.
It's good that we're a little bit further away from the ledge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, if we were closer to the ledge and I was losing my vision like this, it would be a lot more dangerous.
But the fresh air is what you're
over. Well, there. I'm just glad that you thought to come up here onto the roof and try to cool off.
You see, people know it's not the roof because they don't hear any wind and any, you know, external. We you should have done that first. It would have been more believable. But it is radio, so we can can certainly paint pictures, and that's the magic of radio. Oh my God, do you see that? You see, you don't know what I just saw. You don't know, but you can imagine.
I am glad that you injured yourself opening that window, though, because there is a breeze now. But
I could have opened the window without injuring myself. Would you have been glad if I did that?
It is sweltering, and when you talk election return, oh, wow.
When you say it's sweltering, yes, it is sweltering, but it's not nearly as sweltering as it is in the city. In Manhattan, I think it was in the mid-90s, maybe even the upper 90s today, and out here on Long Island, only in the 80s, you know, maybe the mid-80s, possibly the lower 80s. So that's a big difference. And if you go out east even further to the Hamptons, it's in the 70s. So, yeah, it's like the cultural differences are astounding, and we may never understand each other. But one thing we do understand, the strike is over. Yeah.
That ended quickly, huh? That was
one commuting day, if you just work on the weekdays. But the last LIRR strike, and that is how you say it. I don't know why the New York Times wrote that article saying that there's all kinds of contention as to how to pronounce LIRR. Look, that's the only way you pronounce it. That's the only way people around here say it, LIRR. They don't say lur. Nobody says that. They don't say LIRR. I mean, some people might, but they're quickly corrected. LIRR is the right way to say it. So, you know, just New York Times, study the culture before you write articles that just don't make any sense. So, okay, the last strike was, I think, 1994, was it? Or 1993? 1994, I'm pretty sure. That lasted 2 days. This one lasted 3 days. I'm not sure how many other strikes there have been with the LIRR. I do know there was an MTA strike involving the subways and buses. I think it's the buses, too, in around 2007 or so. And that might confuse people. Think, yeah, there was another strike, but it didn't affect the LIRR. It just affected the subways. And what they did was they closed the bridges to cars that had less than four people in them. And the funny thing is, you know, I tried to get to the city. I remember this. I tried to get to the city, and I had a smart car that could only seat two people. You can't fit four people. And they wouldn't let me cross. They said, you have to have four people. There aren't four seats. There's no way to do it. Sorry, the rules are the rules. That is stupidity. That is taking the rules too seriously and not thinking, not using your damn brain. So, yeah, that was what I learned from that particular escapade. I'm not sure how many other strikes there have been. I do know there have been strikes over the years, and maybe people can fondly recollect what strikes they grew up with. But this one, it gave us a bunch of challenges because, well, people couldn't get to the city easily. You could get there if you could figure out how to get to particular train stations that had free shuttle buses that took you to a subway station in Queens. You could do that, but you could only do that during rush hour. My favorite solution, which I don't know if anybody actually did, was something that's kind of unique to the local area, where you find your way to Port Jefferson, you hop on the ferry, you take the ferry over to Bridgeport, and you grab a Metro North train to Grand Central. You know, you spend an extra, what, $20 or so? And it takes a bit longer, but, you know, it's fairly pleasant, and you get to the destination in the end. I didn't hear that suggested once, and I would have liked to have tried it, but I guess I can always try it, but there's no strike anymore. Right about now, everything is coming back to normal. They said about 4 o'clock, that's when all the trains should be running as they usually do during evening rush hour. Most important news is game one of the Knicks series starts tonight, and the trains will be running. There's mass panic as to how people from Long Island were going to get to Madison Square Garden, and now that's been averted.
Yeah, I'm glad everyone is happy and back to work and being able to commute.
Not everyone is happy, Kyle. Bruce Blakeman is not happy.
Well, sure.
The Nassau County executive who was running for governor against Kathy Hochul was trying to use this to prove that he's better than her, without actually giving any evidence of that, but trying to blame her for everything. It was weird because, for some reason, the ultra-right wing, they were supporting this particular union. They never support unions. The only union they support are the police unions and when something like this happens. But normally, they are anti-union. They are anti-strike of any sort. They are pro-management. And in this particular case, they were all in on the labor side of things. So it just made it kind of weird and suspicious. And you could see how Blakeman was trying desperately to gain points. I don't think he did. I really don't think he did.
Yeah, I heard that a lot of this was due to the fact that there are other contracts that MTA has to negotiate in the coming year or 2 years or several years. And it's going to matter a lot when there are other huge events and mm-hmm. that system is, you know, vulnerable if everybody quits for weeks on end. So this maybe was the one part of that system, LIRR, as you said. first at the table, sort of.
Well, you know, I'm sure there are lies on all sides.
There
always are.
Exaggerations.
But,
and,
you know, the thing they kept saying was that these are the highest paid railroad workers in the country. Now, is that a lie or is that the truth? If it's the truth, well, you know, what does that say to the other workers, you know, in that line, particularly ones who are working for the same organization, i.e. the MTA, like Metro North or the subways? If these folks on the LIRR get a lot of money, well, then won't those people want the same amount? And shouldn't they get the same amount? What's different? And why are they making so much money? I know it's expensive in the area, but not everybody gets that kind of a raise every year. You know, I'm not saying I'm not on their side. I am, I guess, in some ways, but in other ways, it kind of seems not entirely fair to everybody else. You know, I hear it's unacceptable to expect anyone to contribute anything for their health care. Okay, that would be nice if that was true for everybody. It doesn't seem to be, because I know a lot of people who are paying a fortune for their health care and they have a job. So how about we all get the same kind of treatment? You know, it's nice to make $150,000. That's what the rail workers supposedly average. Supposedly, again, maybe that's a lie. I don't know. But the rest of us are struggling, and people are struggling with high prices, with just not being able to meet expenses with this ridiculous quote-unquote war that's going on. Remember the tariffs? Those are still there, and we're paying for those. There are so many things we're paying for other than just the general incompetence of the administration, not knowing what they are doing. And the people who are complaining about Biden nonstop are remarkably silent when it comes to somebody who's making things so much worse. So, I don't know. It's I get a little impatient when people have all the answers. It's not as simple as they make it out to be, and a lot is left out. And, boy, you know, every day, I mean, there are so many things we can focus on right now, but every day seems to be another example of something so corrupt and outrageous that we just are going to forget about in a few days. You know, we should be remembering as well as they remember every minor little thing that was enough to get them out in droves to vote for what we have right now. It's a weird society we live in right now. It really is, because none of this should be happening. And yet it's happening, and the effects are everywhere.
One thing that I've thought about in a lot of this, because it's a lot to take in, a lot to keep track of, a lot to make sense of. I think about how I would explain it to someone else, like what is going on here. Because there are a lot of people that are not in the country, a lot of people who have left the country, people who have never been here, never even considered coming to the United States of America. But as we're like celebrating going into like 4th of July eventually.
Oh yeah.
This whole 250 year thing, this whole, parade of different things.
This patriotic orgy.
It's a lot. Yeah. 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 I think that's apt, way to put an apt characterization. So it's this ongoing thing, and I wonder, and I think to myself out loud, like, or I am here, what are we, like, in all of our complexity, what are we confronting in this celebration? And how do you describe the types of politics that those folks are demanding, that the leadership is demanding, and that the ways people think about it and are resisting it. I like, because outsiders are, they hear what they hear, and they kind of probably arrive at one or the other thing and then would put that to us, right? So I'm imagining the response of like, you know, the sigh, the deep breath, and the, where do you start? Like, because it is still a diverse place. We're all confronting it and facing our level, you know, however much we've participated in it. And I have a familiarity that this reality is made, it's a jarring turn, and it's meant to be.
Right.
So that's part of it. Like, the confusing aspects of it, I think, would be maybe where I would start, is that it's meant to be like this, this chaotic, precarious, era.
Mm-hmm.
It's by design in a lot of ways, because the comfortable, the people that can control, or the political class are insulated in a lot of ways from the people that are the effect of it. And, that's why, like, being asked about, like, well, what's going, you know, how do you live there? How do you deal with people that think these things of your political party or your, you know, I guess we are borrowing, or at least, counting on stories from other countries where they've had divided political cultures and coalitions and parties of people that disagree vehemently on so many different things and even demonize one another. There's even been examples in recent European history, political history, and on back. So I guess it's not that unusual in a lot of ways. It's just that how are we facing it, or how do we grapple with it in a modern moment? And I'm just like, what are the things you actually say to explain, like, where we're, why we need to do something, you know, what action or what urgency, is needed? I think that's the logical extent of reaching a conclusion and, like, having kind of a definitive take on it. And I don't know. I like the people that are still trying to make sense of it and not so sure about it, and concluding that this is all a decline, or this is all... Yeah, I think you can't attribute it to any one thing. And so to ask Americans to explain the situation or why they're even... why it's even worth opposing, wrong to the antithesis of our founding, and yet we've arrived here, that somehow we're flawed in some way. I think that's a lot to ask of people.
Yeah.
And I just don't know what I would say, because there's so much to say about why and where we are, and especially on the anniversary like that, you know, 250 years. I think we do have a lot of things to still grapple with and figure out and explain to ourselves. Education's a big part of it. That's, like, disintegrated. And that, I think, is an old issue, but it's by design, the privatizing of it, the fragmentation of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, what we tell ourselves about our country. And I think just this veneer of patriotism is doing us a disservice, as we're supposedly having some introspection while we, you know, tout those 250 years, you know?
Well, look, we've gotten here in a number of ways, for a number of reasons. One is overly simplistic ways of addressing and dealing with problems, thinking that somebody who just says the right things is going to be able to fix everything, when all past history has proven otherwise. Mass media is also highly responsible for just putting things front and center night after night and getting people riled up. And also social networks, you know, Facebook and Twitter and all the other ones, they basically are rounding up hatred and getting people who hate the same things together and strengthening them and giving them power. And that's how we wind up in places like this. That's how other places wind up in similar situations, because you have this this unity that you really had to work for in the past, and now it's being done for you by algorithms. And before you know it, you wind up in an unrecognizable society, and I think that's where we are right now, in a place where we ask ourselves, how did we get here? Well, we got here through all of those elements. You know, we thought we had the answers when it's so much more complex. We've resented people who knew what they were talking about as quote-unquote experts, as if that's a bad thing. I mean, look at the medical profession is viewed now by a lot of people. Look at how, you know, something as basic as vaccines. You know, people are dying, getting sick now from all sorts of things that we shouldn't have anymore. And that's not even addressing the new things that we won't be able to get past if people don't believe what science is saying. Basically, people who have no knowledge or background are expected to be given the same platform as people who have spent their entire lives devoted to studying things and becoming experts and learning what the right thing to do is. And this goes for almost every aspect of our lives, that all of a sudden we've just decided to, you know, throw caution to the wind and listen to everybody and try something else and see what happens, even though we know damn well what's going to happen. You know, we are living in chaos right now. It might not feel like chaos. Chaos usually doesn't announce itself until you look back in history and realize, oh my God, how did I live through that? You know, every day you're just trying to get through. You're trying to, you know, have three meals. You're trying to get to work. You're trying to, you know, make sure things continue to run. And you may not realize that everything is falling apart. It happens in slow motion. When you get somewhere else and you look back on those days, that's when it, I think it really stands out as, wow, that was messed up. And that's kind of, what I'm seeing every day, in the things that are coming out of the government currently in charge. And I guess a good place to start, would be what happened yesterday, when the way the headlines are, announcing it isn't quite accurate. Justice Department announces a $1.7 billion fund to compensate Trump allies in a deal to drop IRS suit. All right, a couple of things there. The story is being put forth as Trump has dropped his lawsuit against the IRS, and he was suing the IRS, what, because they were auditing him or something like that? I didn't know you could sue people who were investigating you, but whatever. He's Trump. He can sue everybody. So I think he was demanding $10 billion just because he pulled that number out of his ass. Okay, fine. He dropped the suit, and now there's a $1.7 billion fund. The way I see this is that he won the suit, and instead of getting $10 billion, he got $1.7 billion. How is that not the way this is being viewed? Because that is what happened. You know, the suit is finished. It's over. He's getting $1.7 billion of our money, of taxpayer money. This is where it's coming from. And we're giving Trump $1.7 billion for him to spread amongst his friends or the people who stormed the Capitol in his name. Do you remember that? Do you remember that? Yeah, January 6th. Those people, the same ones. The same people. They're not distinguishing who was good and who was bad. In fact, the acting attorney general, Todd Blanche, today said he would not rule out the possibility that people who carried out violence during the January 6th riot will be getting payouts from our tax money, $1.7 billion. That is where we are. This is as corrupt as Ceausescu's Romania, where basically that family stole money from the public for years and years and years until one day the public caught up to them and hung them on TV. Yeah. Because, you know, when you steal from the people, when you put down the people, when you live a life of luxury and make them live in squalor, that might work for a while. You know, it might keep you in power for decades even. They might keep your family, some kind of royalty status. But eventually people wake up and they get pissed and they do something. And it's barbaric what they do. It really is. It's not the path I think any of us want to go down, but it's an inevitable path when things like this keep happening. And we've seen time and time again where this regime is basically stealing from the public. You know, the so-called ballroom, remember the promise that it's going to be privately funded, not a penny from the taxpayers. Then you have that that incident at the press dinner, and all of a sudden, no, the people are going to pay for all of it. Billions of dollars, yeah. And we're just supposed to take that and ask for more. In addition, this just came out today. The Justice Department, by the way, in case it's not clear, Trump runs the Justice Department, and he runs it in a way that no other president has ever run such a department. All right, you know, Biden was accused of running the Justice Department this way because Trump was prosecuted. But the impression, at least my impression, was that he had a fairly hands-off policy towards them, and they were working independently. You know, if there's evidence to show otherwise, I haven't seen it. And the only evidence is that people say so. But that's not good enough. You see Trump commanding them to do things. You see his words being echoed by people in the Justice Department who are making these decisions. It's so obvious. You know, he's not very good at covering up what he's doing. So he runs the Justice Department, and he runs the IRS. And basically, he can control what each of these organizations does. So that's why, you know, one can give the other money. Money can be funneled all over the place. He can just write himself a big fat check, and nobody's going to stop him. Nobody is going to do a thing. Oh, sure, there'll be Democrats crying foul, and they will simply be ignored or given less and less power through gerrymandering, through all kinds of other dirty tricks that basically mean that even though you have the majority, your word doesn't mean crap, and you're not going to win any elections, even if you do win elections. That's not democracy. I'm sorry, you can't speak into the microphone, Kyle. You can't just mutter over there.
I said it's a rotten bunch.
It is a rotten bunch. Yeah. Absolutely. And it seems to be getting worse and worse. And I think, you know, every time it does, it wakes up more people. At least I sure hope so, because if it doesn't, yeah, 250th might just as well be the last. And that's one thing I really hope. I really, really hope. This is the 250th anniversary of the United States, the founding of the United States. Do not let MAGA take it over. They are the ones trying to steal this country. They are the ones trying to shut down every advance we have made. They are the ones trying to bring it back to the dark days. Don't let them have the country, the anniversary, the celebration. They don't deserve any of that. And they're going to try. They're going to try to say, people who are saying the kinds of things that we're saying here, we're not the patriotic ones. We're the ones that are communists and that want to do all kinds of evil things. I don't even know. I can't keep up with all the accusations. And they are the true patriots. It's not the case. It's not the case, and all you have to do is read the news. You know, if you can find a fairly unbiased news source, I know that's increasingly hard. But okay, the story today. The Justice Department expanded the agreement it reached with Trump to resolve that lawsuit against the IRS to include a provision. You ready for this? There's a provision now that would bar the IRS from pursuing tax claims against the president, his family, or his businesses. So they're making it illegal for the IRS to do their job if it involves Trump. One-page document signed by Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche, who, by the way, was Trump's personal lawyer. He was Trump's personal lawyer, and now he's the Attorney General. Talk about conflict of interest. But nobody seems to care anymore. Okay, so in this one-page document, because that's pretty much all you need when you're a fascist, and it was quietly posted on the department's website, officials vowed not to pursue any matters, including those involving Trump's tax returns that are currently pending. This provision was released just one day after Trump agreed to drop his suit in exchange for the creation of a $1.8 billion compensation fund for people he believes were wronged by federal investigations or prosecutions. Again, I don't agree with the way that was phrased. The fund drew repeated criticism from Democrats when Mr. Blanche appeared before a Senate Appropriations Subcommittee for a hearing on Tuesday morning. Republicans remarkably silent. Well, not really remarkably anymore. The New York Times reported last week that Trump's talks with the Justice Department and the IRS had included a measure calling on the IRS to drop any audits of the president, his relatives, or businesses. Now think about it. Why would you do that? Why would you insist that all investigations against you be dropped if you had nothing to hide? You know? It's one thing to say you're innocent and to object to being investigated, but to say, I want a law to prevent any investigation against me. You're guilty, man. You're guilty of something, and you're trying to keep us from ever finding out what it is. But I guarantee you, we will. You might not get prosecuted for it, but we'll find out everything you've done that has crossed the line, and it's gonna be quite a summation. In January, Trump, along with two of his sons and the Trump family business, sued the IRS for at least $10 billion over the leak of their tax returns during the president's first term. Think about that. January, he's president, and he sued the IRS. You know, he is suing his own government. He is suing what he's in charge of for something that happened two terms ago, before Biden, when Trump was president last. The Trumps argued that the IRS should have done more to prevent a former contractor from disclosing tax information to the New York Times and ProPublica. I was surprised it took that long. Remember, you know, that was the big question during his first term. You know, what's in his tax returns? Why won't he release them? And the questions still remain. So, yeah, this is pretty disgusting and pretty typical as well. Not surprising.
Yeah, the evidence of all this kind of corruption being normalized is just astounding. It just piles up, and it's definitely cracking your thumb at Americans, everyday Americans.
Yeah, yeah, it's sad, and you can get very discouraged very quickly.
Yeah, I think it's just important that people register their grievance, you know, their disdain for this, keep talking about it, keep, you know, adjusting people's attitudes that, you know, might disagree. Let them know that, you know, you don't really have it right. This isn't right. This isn't how we roll around this country. And I think, like, that moment for Ceausescu when he was giving a speech, like, the timing is everything. And he basically just lost the people. And there's a lot more of that going on. I think they spend a lot of their time suing people and doing damage control. Not that they have, like, lost the appetite for all of that. But, I mean, that's the apparatus that they are. So they just do more of it when people try to go through normal channels. So if that's like what you reduce people to, there's only so much demoralizing you can do, and draconian things and surveillance and all everything else. Like, absolutely, like, when you really think about 250 years, like, we have a very long history of violence. So I think the most important thing is people need to get politically active and vocal in their local and community elections so that it doesn't register as apathy, like mm-hmm. thinking, oh, it's just all inevitable because they've gotten away with so much. Yeah, they're ruthless. They're, like I said, rotten, a rotten bunch.
What I worry about is people giving up, people thinking, my vote doesn't count, not even going to show up.
Yeah, you have to do that anyway, but, like, do everything else, too. Don't make, you know, don't make, get in the way. Don't make it just such a cakewalk. Or, like, as you alluded, that, like, people don't care. I know people do care. They just feel powerless.
Well, that's what I said. People will give up.
Yeah.
Why show up if my vote isn't going to count? Thing is, you know, if enough people show up and vote against this nonsense, that makes a huge statement, and that gets the results that cannot be ignored.
Well, it is power, because you're putting in someone that can then resist with mm-hmm. whatever tools, whatever levers that position might afford them.
Right.
So they're in. You're putting someone in position to act in other ways than previous leadership. That's the whole point of it. Yeah, it's crucial that people participate so that it functions. And only a couple of those little races. I mean, that's the whole thing with the midterms. It's like you start changing the dynamics for some of those decision makers, you end up getting results. Mm-hmm. It's slow at first, but it can be really cumulative and exponential in force.
It can be really fast this November.
That too.
People show up, with the outrage that many of us are seeing, and they don't get discouraged. And again, that's a tactic to make you discouraged. That you believe your vote isn't going to count, so you're not going to even show up. They love that. They want that more than anything. But if you all do show up, and basically make a statement that dwarfs the other side, then you have a country with a future. You do, because it doesn't matter how much they gerrymander. A victory of that nature will get you the power, and then you can fix things so that this can never happen again. It's a long, long road to repair, but that is how you do it. And that really is the only path, because if you just lay back and let this happen, how does it get fixed? How does it ever get undone? It doesn't. It doesn't. It stays this way. And like I said, 250 might as well be the last year, because it won't be a recognizable country after that. And these people have made no secret of the fact that they want to change the way things work, that they want things to always be in their favor, even when they don't deserve it. And that's the thing, you know, the difference between Democrats and Republicans. Democrats, to a fault, I think, try to play fair even when it hurts them. The governor of Colorado just let one of the January 6th rioters, or actually she wasn't a January 6th rioter, she was an election denier who was convicted of stealing ballots or something. I don't know the exact facts of the case, but she was in prison, and he basically commuted her sentence. Didn't excuse the crime, but commuted her sentence because, you know, he didn't think it was fair. Okay, fine. You know, you can agree, you can disagree, but I think we can all agree that is not something a Republican governor would ever do. And it's questionable whether that's a smart thing to act with some sympathy and fairness. You know, like last week we talked about how that happened here in New York in a court, where Bruce Blakeman was given access to the funds that he didn't qualify for because he screwed up the form. A Republican would never have granted that. A Republican court certainly wouldn't have granted that to a Democrat. And we see it constantly. We see it over and over again. And, yeah, we might feel good that, yeah, we're playing fair. We're not like them. But sometimes you have to act like them if you want to defeat them. You have to certainly think like them. And that's something the Democrats have not been able to do. They really, really need to get better at that. It might not feel good, but it's going to feel a whole lot better than constantly losing and being made to feel more and more powerless after every one of these things. All right. Eurovision. Yeah, we talked about Eurovision last week, and boy, that was fun. What we expected might happen kind of did happen, where Israel cheated again with the popular vote, basically having embassies and government officials trying to get people to vote over and over again. Look, you can do that. You can vote over and over again, but no other country has their government get involved and make it into a huge political issue. And Israel does this year after year. This time, they reduced the power of the popular vote. That might have made a big difference. We'll see. And it was really, really close. Israel was in first place until the very, very last vote was counted. And that is when Bulgaria won. And boy, you know, watching this, and by the way, it came across very well on YouTube. If you have an ad blocker, you don't even have to see the ads that are in the middle of it. You can watch all 4 hours and change on YouTube now, see all the performances, see all the drama. When Israel was ahead, everybody was booing. You know, well, certainly a lot of people were booing. It was so extremely loud and not the kind of thing that you associate with Eurovision. And it's not really fair to the artists. I certainly can see that. They didn't do anything wrong. But they had to deal with all that hostility. And the hostility was certainly earned because of what Israel does as far as massacres, genocide, you name it. It's just it's one thing after another. And the way they are defended is inexcusable. It's inexcusable. If you are a supporter of Israel, you should be the first ones to criticize them when they do something horrible. And if you don't believe killing 70,000 innocent people is horrible, you have some work to do. You really do. And that is why there is a call for Israel to be boycotted. Look, it was no trouble at all to keep Russia out of Eurovision. And why was that? Because they're doing horrible things. They're doing horrible things in Ukraine. Israel is doing horrible things in Gaza and now Lebanon and in the West Bank. We can go on, but the point is, it shouldn't matter how much you support the existence of a country. What should matter are their actions. And if you're going to give them a free pass, and that's why 5 countries boycotted this year, more than ever before. 5 countries. Hang on, Spain, Netherlands, Iceland, Ireland, and Slovenia. Yeah. And no doubt they would have had great songs. It would have been a much better contest. You know, the other thing, there are actually 2 other things. Australia is in this too for some reason that I can't figure out. Australia is nowhere near Europe. They shouldn't be in Eurovision, but whatever. There is a rule. If Australia were to win, I should explain this too. When you win, you host the next event the following year. So Bulgaria won. Eurovision will be in Bulgaria in 2027. If Australia were to win, they will not host it. They have agreed to basically nominate another country to host it that is in Europe. Now, if Israel were to win, they don't agree to that. Israel's not in Europe. But no, they'll host it. You know, they'll demand people come to their country. They've done this once before. Even though they're not in Europe, they do not agree the way Australia agrees, which is a perfectly fair thing to do. You're not in Europe. Stop pretending you're in Europe. And, you know, maybe this new competition that was announced over the weekend, which will be taking place in Bangkok later in the year, it's called, and this is ridiculous, Eurovision Asia. You're rolling your eyes.
I'm out.
Yeah.
No.
You're a Eurovision agent.
No.
A second grader could get this right. Don't call it Eurovision Asia. Call it Asia Vision. For God's sake, it's not hard. They're a continent. You know, you're not a paternalistic entity telling them how to run things. It's Asia. If you're going to do it at all, give them the name. Let them have the name. Don't take it for yourself. You know, if it's a question of business connections or whatever, you can still work that out. But, you know, it kind of got overshadowed by the stupid name.
They could name it Eurasia.
Oh, yeah, that's perfect. That's absolutely great. And what was the third thing that Israel did that was unfair? Let's see. If they win, they demand to have it in their country. They were cheating at the voting, the genocide.
Well, they're telling people to vote more than they could.
Telling people, well, that was the government.
10 votes or
something. Yeah, you know, they'll come to me. It'll come to me. There's a third thing or a fourth thing. I don't know. There's too many things. The important thing is, though, that...
they lost?
Well, that wasn't important. I mean, if they had won... It would have been bad for Eurovision, I think, if Israel had won.
It would have been a very bad look.
First of all, they didn't have the best song. And, you know, I don't think I'm saying anything controversial by saying that.
Well, a lot of places that you would expect would perform did not,
mm-hmm.
except for the UK. Nobody expects anything from that.
Well, for some reason, and I don't think this is fair either, the UK always comes in really close to last. And that might be because they broke away from Europe. They say it's a political reason. I don't know. It's hard to really say for sure. Eurovision is not without their own political agendas. There's
drama.
No question about it. Yeah, drama all over the place. But, yeah, you know, this is something that really needs to be dealt with. And, you know, if there is going to be an Asia Vision, and that's all I'm going to call it.
It should be their own.
Israel should be in that one if they're going to be anywhere, because Israel is in Asia, not in Europe. If you can even consider it in Asia being the Middle East. And I think legally it's more Asia than Europe. It's definitely not Europe.
I would prefer it was a whole other competition that just grew on its own sort of organically, not really being affiliate, like franchised.
Turkey is part in Europe, part in Asia. Russia is part in Europe, part in Asia. So you do have countries that are in both, but Israel's not one of them. Unless they invade another country and take that over, and then that's in Europe. You know, that's the only way they can do it. And don't think they won't try.
And Morocco?
Morocco is in Africa.
That's like North Africa.
Wait, Morocco's not in Eurovision.
No.
Right? Yeah, okay, so no problems there. No problems there. You know what? Okay, so we just found out that we're on for another hour because we need to do a fill-in, which is fine. Because it's hard to shut us up sometimes, and we do have more material.
So Phil's coming in now?
No, we're staying on.
Oh, fill in.
Very funny. We have the winning entry from Eurovision that won on Saturday night. I got to tell you, it was so much fun watching that for over 4 hours without a commercial break. That's how it should be done. That's how it should be done. And just the enthusiasm and the support, for the most part, that was there was inspirational. But let's listen to this song. You've heard the song, right?
Yes.
It's inspirational. It's got some energy to it.
Yes, it's a banger.
It's a banger. Everyone says that. We will be back right afterwards. The winning entry at Eurovision from Bulgaria. No, that's the wrong thing. There are so many things here. Okay, I'm gonna pick the right one this time. I'm sorry. The winning entry at Eurovision from Bulgaria. Bangaranga, bangaranga, bangaranga. Yeah. Kyle, how are you able to do that in this heat? You must be sweating up a storm. Whew.
I can't contain myself sometimes.
Uh-huh. Almost knocked over a speaker.
Yeah, okay, I'm glad I stretched.
Yeah. So that is the winning entry. Bangaranga. I don't want to say it wrong. Bangaranga. From Bulgaria.
Bangaranga.
Yeah.
Welcome to the ride.
From Dara. And boy, was she greeted as a hero in Sofia when she arrived back there on Sunday.
I would say, like, that's going to be a really interesting host country.
They've never won before.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about, you know?
I just know that the production, wherever they set it, whatever city gets it, and how they set the stage for the competition mm-hmm. will be really fascinating because the backdrop, the themes, a lot of it will have to do with the country itself, and to see how they tell their own story is going to be really fascinating.
You're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook. This is Off the Wall. We are on apparently for another hour because of a emergency fill-in that we are here for. And right now we're talking about Eurovision and the fun that was. Talking about the boycott by five countries, the participation of Israel, and how this whole thing should be run and shouldn't be run. I remember the all the points, the 3 points I was making about Israel is the genocide for one thing, the fact that Israel refuses to yield if they win, and take Eurovision out of Europe, which really doesn't seem fair, and also the fact that they cheat in the voting, and have embassies and government officials get involved, which you know it's kind of like what we're seeing with gerrymandering. Where, you know, it's technically legal, but it's so very wrong. It's so very, very bad and wrong and should not be happening. And I guess, you know, if you want to have a fourth factor there, they're not in Europe, so they shouldn't be in Eurovision, just like Australia shouldn't be in Eurovision. Which, you know, works out because if there's an Australia vision that they announce, Australia is almost guaranteed to win every one of those, right? Look, I'm sorry the continent is so weird that it's also a country, but I didn't make the rules. All right, so invariably, whenever you criticize Israel for anything, you get hit with all this nonsense about how they're just fighting for their survival and that they're constantly being killed and targeted. And, you know, there are evil people out there that are, in fact, targeting Jews around the world. We see all kinds of disturbing things in London and other parts of the world. We have for ages, you know, decades, centuries. It's been going on for a very long time. But that does not mean that people in Israel are not also capable of horrible things. And there are many, many examples of that. Do you know, and this is very interesting, if you do a little bit of digging into this, that Christians in Israel are living in fear from ultra-Orthodox right-wing Israelis. I'm saying Israelis, but, you know, many in the world would say Jews. Except I won't say that because there are so many Jewish people that are not on board with that. And to categorize everybody, this is what the right wing wants. They want Israeli policy to be synonymous with Jewish thought. And when you do that, and when people say, oh, this guy's got a yarmulke on, he supports Israel, or he supports the current Israeli government, that is very likely not the case. In fact, I think most of the critics of Israel are Jewish, which, you know, might surprise you, but it happens to be fairly close to the truth, if not the truth. Because when you have an open dialogue, when you have the ability to express your feelings and thoughts without being tied to one side or another, i.e. the way Republicans are in our country right now, you get honest opinions, which often don't align with current regimes. Netanyahu does not represent the Jewish people. He represents the Israeli people. And there are so many people around the world and in his own country who are appalled by the things he has done. But by getting the world to say every time an Israeli is attacked, it's an attack on the entire Jewish world, well, he gains a lot of power by doing that, by tying. He's basically doing the same thing that the worst racists in the world already do, where they basically blame the Jews for everything. Well, Netanyahu is basically trying to get the world to do that by saying, yeah, all the Jews in the world support the horrors that my regime is behind. What are you going to do about it? You're going to attack my people? Well, that just gives me more power. I can do more things then because I'll just say I'm defending our people and Israel has the right to defend itself and all that. Give me a break. It never ends. And when you have this this belief that any action that you undertake, no matter how heinous, is because they started it and we're just defending ourselves. Who has the stopwatch? Who is it that said this is when it began and they did it first? I don't think anybody can point to a time or an instance where it all just started. That's the way it is with situations like this. It's a conflict. Nobody can get to the beginning of it. It's just a conflict that has seemingly always been in play. So it's meaningless. Yeah, you can say October 7th. I'm getting my evil dates mixed up. October 7th was the beginning. But, you know, then people who live in Palestine will say, well, no, there were massacres well before then of our people. And then the Israelis will say, yes, but then you blew up buses. And it just keeps going back and back and back. And does it really matter who was first? The thing is, right now, it's horrible. It's terrible. One thing that is fairly easy to conclude is that killing 70,000 people is a whole lot worse than killing 2,000 people. Yeah, they're both horrible and should never happen. But there are different things. There are different levels that you have to recognize. And you can't just keep using the excuse that we're defending ourselves and doing horrible things as a result of that. There is no excuse. And when the world court gets involved and you basically condemn the world court and anybody who criticizes you as anti-Semitic, you've pretty much lost all credibility. And that's a horrible thing. I'm a supporter of Israel, but I'm not a supporter of this Israel. I'm not a supporter of this regime. I'm a supporter of more like what was in the beginning. And that wasn't entirely fair either. But at least there was a chance things could be worked out. And again, you know, another point that people like to make is that, well, we gave them a chance and they turned it down. So now we took over their land and this is what they have to. You can't punish people forever for what you consider to be a mistake. You have to at some point say, we need to live in peace. We need to take care of each other. Because I'll tell you, the whole rest of the world is getting pretty sick of this. And we all want it to end. We all want it to not be something we're constantly dealing with. So anyway, yeah. Christians in Israel. A foreign nun was the victim of violent physical assault in Jerusalem last month. Local activists and clergy say they were shocked, but not surprised. In the past few years, anti-Christian incidents have surged in Israel, illustrating how a small minority of insular and mainly ultra-religious nationalist or ultra-Orthodox Jews are becoming increasingly emboldened to act out their anger and hate. This is a story I suggest you look into. Just look for Christians in Israel, and you'll see a whole lot of stories about this, not getting reported nearly as much as it should be reported. Now, you know, if somebody gets attacked in the UK for being Jewish, that is also horrible and is rightfully condemned. But you see it everywhere in the media. You see it talked about. And this is just passed over. And if you look at what's happening to Palestinians at the hands of Israeli settlers. That is something that it's a crime to ignore. They are being murdered. They are being driven from their homes that they have lived in forever. And these Israeli settlers have no right to be there. That is established law that Israel is just ignoring and writing their own laws now. And it's wrong. It's wrong to simply ignore this and pretend it's not a problem when it is, or to say that Israel is just defending itself. They're not. This is a crime. And, of course, you have all kinds of horrible things that are inspired by these actions, by these injustices, and what happened yesterday, the terrorist act in San Diego. And anyone who says it's not a terrorist act is not in possession of the facts. You had two teenagers basically shoot up a mosque and kill three innocent people before killing themselves. They had all kinds of hate slogans, anti-Islam writings and things like that. Who knows? Who knows what was in their heads and what drove them to do this and to give up their own lives? No one saw it coming, apparently. Although, you know, one kid's mother was concerned when three of her guns disappeared because apparently they were just lying around. And her son was kind of unstable, according to her words. Look, this is something that we see a lot of. We see a lot of hatred. It comes from all different sides, anti-Jewish, anti-Islam, anti-Christian, all over the world. Hatred is very easy to spread, and it's very easy to find other people to share whatever hatred you want to be a part of. This has to be taken seriously by everybody. It should not be glossed over. You know, just don't read the comments on any news story about this. That's how ugly things have gotten. This is the epitome of hatred and horror, and something we should be fighting. All of us should be fighting on every level. And there are so many good people who are doing just that. So many good people on all sides from all religions who get it, who come together, who support each other. And if you're part of a religion that does not support other religions, you're in the wrong religion. You're not in a religion. You're in a hate group. And just all the hatred that is preached from our government, and yes, it comes directly from our government, that contributes to this. That inspires this. The blood is on their hands. There is no doubt about that. We can be better. And until the day comes where we drive them out, we have to be better. Or this will take over and become who we are. So, yeah, Eurovision. Yeah, it was fun. It was fun, and I'm happy to have witnessed it. But it opened up some eyes. And if it got some discussions going, all the better. All right. I'm sorry for the diatribe, Kyle.
No, so many interesting points, and I love how connected all these things are to culture and art, and it's great to get people creating works that encapsulate the feeling in universal ways, that tell stories about places, that tell stories about communities, about an individual's let's say fight to be on a stage, to be heard, to be looked at and seen in such a busy world, a busy time. So yeah, it was fun and a friendly competition between nations, and that's a sporting just kind of fun, a little bit of fun in the cycle of news and competition and non-sports.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's important that anyone who is part of a regime that is committing awful crimes, they should not be blamed. And I hope that the Israeli competitors in Eurovision were treated respectfully. I'm sure they felt badly being booed, and that's it's not fair to them. But they were put in that position by their own government, and it's wrong on a number of levels. You know, there was an instance a few days ago where the North Korean football team was visiting South Korea. Apparently, they had to play a football game against South Korea. I don't know what the exact conditions were, but they arrived through China because they couldn't go directly from North Korea to South Korea. And they were being cheered by people in South Korea because, you know, they're the athletes, and they're, you know, it's hard. It's probably very emotional having to do that. And they should not be made to feel for the crimes of their regime, you know, put forth a good image of yourself and your people. It might make a difference. You don't know. That's how I, like to view it anyway. So we have the World Cup coming up in just a few weeks now. While Israel's not playing, I don't think, in this particular competition.
I thought we were done with talking about corruption for tonight.
Well,
there's so many
I just wanted to point out that
earlier.
Iran is going to be playing. In fact, it's kind of weird. Iran tried to get out of playing in the United States because there are three countries that are hosting it, United States, Canada, and Mexico. They wanted to be transferred to Mexico and play their games there, and FIFA wouldn't have it. They said, no, you have to play in the United States. And, well, that's going to be interesting. That's going to be something. We'll see how our government treats them. And I'm sure there'll be all kinds of other international incidents as well. To add to all the crazy FIFA corruption that's already happening, pretty much keep making it impossible for people to get tickets. And those people who do get tickets, completely unable to go and support whatever team they want to support without jumping through all kinds of hoops. I'm talking about the massive train fare that New Jersey was forced to impose on ticket holders because FIFA won't allow them to use their own parking lot. And because a local mall is basically jettisoning the price of parking in their parking lot to, a couple hundred bucks for one game? It's nuts. It's nuts what the American way is doing to what should be a fun time for all. And I always thought that when the World Cup came to this country that we would all be able to enjoy it, but not only the people who can afford $10,000 tickets or... that's not even the most expensive one. Insane amounts. And we're talking about, you know, teams that no one in this country really is following in the first place, except if you happen to be from that country. And many of the countries are kind of tiny. So watching it on TV, that's fine. That's just fine. But boy, what a lost opportunity this was. And also an opportunity to show our true colors. You know, they're going to be playing games on July 4th, our 250th anniversary. They're going to be playing World Cup games in the United States on July 4th. I'm just saying, right now, at this point, that is going to be one hell of a day. That's going to be crazy. So we'll just have to see what happens. Okay, we have a feature that we hinted at before that now we are going to plunge into. Yes, it's another edition of Films of the Year That Was, our sustaining feature that occasionally pops up its head. It was on hiatus. Well, we saw the films that we were supposed to see. We've been seeing every Academy Award-winning film since the Academy Awards began, and we even saw films before the Academy Awards began that we thought were pretty good. We caught up, and then we fell behind, and now we are in 2026, but we didn't do 2025 yet, so we're going to have to go back and do 2025 at some point. But we did 2026, the domestic film, whose name escapes me.
One Battle After Another.
One Battle After Another. That was good. Leonardo DiCaprio and all those others.
Yeah.
We already reviewed that. Go find it in the archives. And now we have the international film, because there's United States and there's international. And this particular film was from a country called Norway. And the film was called Sentimental Value. And we're here in the expanded edition of tonight's Off the Wall to give an honest and perhaps somewhat painful review of the best international film for 2025, which is awarded in 2026. That's how that works. Sentimental Value, which I'm trying to kill time while the theme finishes.
Well, this film...
We can't start until it finishes. Hold on.
I'm so glad you...
That's got another minute left, really? When do we pick such a long theme? I don't remember it being this long. Maybe because it's 120 degrees in the studio that it feels long.
Well, we begin our journey into
No,
film.
No, you can't review the film. We're legally not allowed to do that.
I'm sorry, I can't hear anything.
Well, we started this feature years ago, and we would see a film a week, I think. Maybe even two films a week?
We had a good cadence.
We saw the domestic film and the foreign film.
Uh-huh.
How do we have time to see so many films?
We were studious.
Well, it's like 100 years worth of films.
It was a lot of films.
Yeah, and then we somehow found this theme, too, which apparently it's like a player piano that goes on forever. We play that every single week. Wow, we're committed. All right, we're in the last 10 seconds. Let's just enjoy it. Whew, okay. That was more trouble than it was worth. So, Sentimental Value from Norway. What do you think, Kyle?
Well, oh, wow. This film is a really kind of a simmering, slow stew of a film. It is something that takes you on a little bit of a time shift through time. It's set really around this sort of fifth character or extra character that is the home, this fantastic wood home that... There's a story of ultimately a suicide that the protagonist, or one of the protagonists, Gustav Borg, a psychotherapist who is basically fallen out of love
he's not a psychotherapist. His wife is a psychotherapist. He's a filmmaker. Gustav?
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. He's the director,
right?
And the partner he's ended his marriage with is a psychotherapist.
Yes.
Boy, it is warm in here.
It's
pretty
warm.
I was fanning myself with the paper that I was reading.
Yeah, that's while you were reading it too.
All right. So yeah, I messed that up. She's a psychotherapist.
We don't really get to know her.
No.
Because she's dead.
It's not really that consequential. I've barely gotten through the first sentence of this plot summary. Point is, the house is there, he's reminiscing, his daughters are upset at him over his drinking and, I guess, stoic fatherly nature, and
his absence, he wasn't there.
Yeah, and then...
Did a lot of drinking.
Yeah, so there's... his filmmaking that he really dives into in his career, and he incorporates his kids into his films, but they have to sort of communicate as they're older, and in this where we find him a later part of his life, they're establishing boundaries. And so we're going through his wanting to continue his career and with his peers who are also accomplished and aged, he's going through that dilemma and realizing that even though he wants to tell this story and it's wildly personal and intertwined with his children, they're resisting because of the story he's not telling, I guess, and coming to terms with his relationship with them. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it is. But can I just say, before we get into the whole story of the film, what you mentioned about the extra character being the house.
Yeah.
Come back.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is something I like a lot. I think of TV shows like St. Elsewhere. I think of movies like The Shining, The Grand Budapest Hotel, where buildings are characters. They have personality. They're vital to the plot. And I think when you are able to do that successfully, you have one of the main ingredients for a good film, a fascinating film. And just seeing how the house changed over the years and people's relationship to it, it got a little confusing at times because, you know, my problem, I have difficulty with faces, but two sisters were in this film. And I swear to God, they kept changing their hairstyles and, you know, sometimes one was down, one was tied back, then they would swap and the other one was doing that. And their faces were similar enough look, I know in real life sisters look similar. You don't have to do that in the film, though, to that extent.
Also,
because I will get very confused. And on top of everything else,
They
introduced an American actress
right.
who was supposed to play one of them in the film that their father was making, and then she dyed her hair to look like them.
Literally,
so now there's three of them walking around looking the same, and I can't tell them apart. It gets really, really confusing for me. So please, directors out there, just keep people like me in mind. Maybe name tags, that might be a solution, just something to, when Evil Kirk was fighting Good Kirk in Star Trek, or in The Prisoner when they did it there, you always have one of them wearing a different color shirt, or one has a mustache. You know, little tricks like that, they help the audience tell apart different characters. They couldn't have mustaches, I know, but you know, do something with the hair. Somebody call someone else by name every... You ever notice in some TV shows or movies where a guy always calls his sister Sis or says, "Hey, cousin, how are you?" Those are tricks to tell the audience who this person is. You never do that in real life. When do you call your sister Sis in a casual conversation, or refer to your cousin and call them cousin instead of, you know, Brad or whatever their name is? You don't do that. That's not normal. But in films and TV, it's a little trick that can be used to, you know, keep your audience up to date. I'm done.
Yeah. The last part of the plot when they're filming and they finally do the production, after the final take, she exchanges a wordless, understanding look with her father. Now, I'd like to elaborate on that last sentence, because I find many parts of this film had exchanges that were wordless and understanding with their father. And I understand he's this stoic, quiet guy, but how many long exchanges of glances can you fit in one movie? I think this is the real feat in this production.
It's a Scandinavian movie. You can fit almost an unlimited number.
Does anyone get the irony, I guess, or just the paradox of them being like stoic and wordless, and then us having to read into these wordless, stoic exchanges that are as ostensibly meaningless because these characters, I guess, just don't express anything.
Mm-hmm.
So what am I to make of their lack of expression when we're spending shot after shot reading into nothing?
Well,
after the first couple frames,
uh-huh,
I'm good.
I was admiring the scenery, to be honest. It was very well shot.
And there was a lot of meandering
exchanges
I took issue with.
Did you get at the end that they had to sell the house to make the film? That's what all the redesigning of the house.
Cool. That was sad.
I mean, I thought, at least get the house back.
That was the manifestation of that, like, cold reality or realist. I don't know. There's something about that. It was a transformation of that character that we observed when we were talking earlier. Anyway, I'm not knocking the film entirely. You really gotta like have the patience for some of those exchanges, the back and forth where there's no dialogue. Do not expect a really heavy dialogue heavy experience you have to kind of pick up on the relationships and then understand how emotional and read into the lifetime and the hurt that has grown as all the characters' lives
well,
have evolved.
That's the thing. You couldn't really keep up with it because, okay, so for some reason I remember the names. I'm usually bad at that too. But Nora was the first sister. She was the actress. And Agnes was the other sister who was, oh, this is going to sound horrible, the mother. I know she was more than that, but they basically hammered it into your head that she was raising a kid and Nora wasn't. So Agnes stayed at home and raised the kid, and Nora went out and was an actress in various plays. Plays where she got this horrible stage fright, and entire audiences were waiting a half hour for her to show up. Apparently she was only in plays where she walked out and started the whole thing. Not a play where, you know, she played a guard and just, you know, was standing there or something. No, she had to start a soliloquy or something. But when she finally got around to doing it, she was very good and, you know, well worth it. That is why her father wanted her to be in his new film. Now, to confuse you, her sister Agnes, the mother, she had already been in a film of her father's as a child. And it was a very well-received film, but somehow she didn't wind up being an actress. She wound up just raising a kid, and her sister wound up being an actress. But she didn't want to be an actress for her father because she couldn't get along with him. She was very angry at her dad, and Agnes didn't sympathize with that at all and said that Nora was exaggerating and that she should knock it off, my words. Then all of a sudden Agnes was upset at her dad. I don't know why. She just had this blowout with him. Well, he wanted her son to be in the film that he was making. She apparently didn't like that very much, but she never really got into why. And the other thing, and I kind of hear what you're saying, Kyle, I didn't understand why Nora suddenly got along with her dad. There was just this look, this exchange, and, well, okay, she read the script. And apparently the script was so good that it put aside everything that she was upset about. And basically got her involved in the film. And that, okay, so the end of the film, Kyle, I'm curious what you thought about that, because the end of the film was done very interestingly. You thought you were in the house, but in actuality, you were on a stage. All the windows were blue, because I guess blue screen or something, and
yeah, it was a keyframe.
Yeah, and they were acting out the film, which happened to take place in that house, and basically was a story about his mother who wound up killing herself, and I guess he was the kid, but he was having his grandkid play him, even though he repeatedly said, "This is not the story of my mother," but it really was. And even the American actress saw that. And eventually she dropped out because she realized, you know, this doesn't really make any sense. And in a way, she was kind of commenting on the actual film, I think, sentimental value. This doesn't really make much sense because why is all this happening without any actual explanation? And people are so similar to each other, and it's kind of confusing. And they're very stoic, and they don't express their emotions. And, yeah, you know what? I'm going home. I think that's pretty much what her conclusion was.
Yeah, definitely. I was anticipating that they would end with this rather graphic, difficult memory being depicted on a soundstage as a replica, and him finally being able to produce that. But it's not clear to me how much he's actually reconciled and. I don't know where the family is and all of that. And I think there's just so much that you're assumed to have invested in a lot of the characters. Mm-hmm. I guess they're not as developed, or I don't have a lot more to understand, because most of the pain you're inferring is from really brief flashbacks and stuff. But anyway, yeah, it was good. It was interesting. It was great to be back watching films. And
yeah,
I don't know. I would recommend people check out The International Winner, see what it's all about. Definitely some talented portrayals, and it's good to see people producing these kinds of things in different ways, you know, doing a little bit of stuff with time shifting and all that, but, you know, also talking about family dynamics. So, yeah, it was really, really neat.
I've got to say, I know we're not really supposed to talk about this, but we have perfected a method of making popcorn for all these films on a pan, which... it's a lot of fun. It's kind of dramatic sometimes, and we always come up with a couple of really good batches. And I think that might be one of my favorite parts. In this particular case, I think it was my favorite part because the film itself kind of dragged a little bit, but it was still fun to take that journey.
Yeah, and there was lots of scenery and B-roll and natural surroundings in the landscape. So it was fun to sit through and share with you.
And we have 2025 coming up in a future week, which we will get to. But that's it for films of the year that was for this week. And let me tell you, you do not want to be running a projector in weather like this. It gets so hot, and it heats up the entire room. So it was a mistake to leave that on the whole time. Yeah, you know what? Why don't we try taking phone calls? Because we have extra time. We're on 2 hours today, and we only have a few minutes left. And we have a special phone number. So don't call the radio station, because you'll get a confused person at the radio station.
Yeah, next time, can I get a copy of the alert about the two-hour show?
I found out 20 minutes before the show.
Can you send that to my...
I found out 20 minutes before the show. All right. I did.
You know, is there a phone tree?
Happen.
A phone
it's,
shrub?
No, there are no phones.
A phone
it's,
weed?
It's radio. These things happen. There's crises. People running down the hallway screaming. All sorts of things happen. It's just the nature of the beast.
But respect me is what I'm saying.
Uh-huh.
You know, respect me.
Everyone
I feel
you.
Disrespected.
Well, okay. Well, hopefully this caller coming in who has not yet dialed the number because we haven't given
what
it out
caller?
Yet.
There's no caller.
We haven't given out the damn phone number yet. Let me give out the phone number. 80. Listen, it's area code 802-321-4225. We're not kidding. That's the actual phone number. 802-321-4225. You might say, hey, you're on Long Island. I'm on Long Island. Why am I calling Vermont? You know, don't ask questions. I thought we made that clear earlier. Don't ask questions. They get in the way. That's the number. You want to reach us, 802-321-4225. We're only going to have the phone lines open for about 5 minutes. We're only doing it because we have extra time today, and we're tired and hot and crabby. I hope we hear from somebody. Maybe
well,
Kyle...
We thought we'd give ourselves a little extra challenge.
Yeah.
You want, like, the full Chernobyl treatment?
Look, I saw what those people did at Eurovision this weekend. If they can do that, we can do this. Or maybe we can't. I don't know. But we can try at least, and you know, see how we can make 2 hours go by. Like it's so damn hot in here.
Yeah. So when you're calling, share your thoughts, impressions, and kindness with other listeners. You can put something forth over the airwaves. We're granting you that.
Now the phone line's plugged in this week, right? Because
I'm ready to go. Do you want to ring her or not?
Yeah, well, obviously.
You want to hear it?
How are we going to know someone's calling without a ringer?
The ID's all set up. Yeah, you're good.
802-321-4225. Again, we only have about 5 minutes for this.
Wait, why 5 minutes?
Because we're signing off. And we have an extra long...
Oh, wow, we are.
We have an extra long outro, too.
I didn't realize, wow, that time went by.
Time does go by. When we start talking...
The second hour,
usually
really.
Time slows down for other people, but for us, it goes fast.
Well, I'm ready.
Okay, why don't you appeal to the callers, because whatever I'm doing...
I just didn't. You interrupted me.
I'm sorry. I'll shut up.
You started talking about how hot it is.
Yeah, because I had to. But, you know,
I don't know?
I'll cut myself. So, yeah, stop talking. You didn't do anything.
What? You didn't... I was watching the phone. I'm supposed to answer.
Well, we have an audible ringer, so we'll be able to hear it Please give out the phone number and appeal to people to call.
I don't know the number.
I just, yeah, okay, if you don't know the number and you're sitting right here in the same room, how do you expect the listeners to know the number when I've said
okay,
it three
fine,
times?
Okay, fine, fine. I'll give out the number.
Here we go.
The number is 1-802-321-4225.
That's the number. Hopefully somebody will call it soon because we're exhausted.
802-321-4225. Tell us what's on your mind. You're talking to Off the Wall on WUSB, Stony Brook, WUSB.
This is Kyle. That's Emmanuel. And we are waiting for your telephone call.
Yes.
802-321-4225. You can say anything that's on your mind. You can respond to anything we were saying, or you can bring up something new. But again, we only have about 3 minutes to do this.
Yeah, 3 minutes. We're like this local little, like, chit-chat show, you know, once a week.
People are afraid to voice opinions.
I'm still, like, I get butterflies sometimes, but I'm a little more used to it.
Is that why you're not calling?
No, I'm not going to call.
See?
Are you kidding?
This,
I don't want to be on the radio. Are you kidding?
This is what I'm dealing with.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's scary.
It's not scary.
No, you just have to talk and, like, be yourself.
Pretend it's C-SPAN. You know, it's C-SPAN 4.
Okay, we got your point. Let's move on to the next caller.
Yeah, that guy is so patient.
And from Portland, Maine, we have Gary. Hi, Gary. What's your comment? What's your issue of the week?
I'm upset at these Democrats. I call them Democrats.
And on the independent line, we have another Republican. This is Jerry.
I don't think people are calling. I don't think people are too shy or you know, maybe the transmitter's broken again or
802-321-4225.
Or the phone line could be broken, I suppose. There's all sorts of possibilities. Or this is all an illusion.
You may all be eluded.
But you know what's going to happen? The phone's going to go nuts after we sign
yeah,
off.
After.
That always happens.
If you'd like to write otw@2600.com.
That's otw@2600.com. Don't spell it out. You won't get anywhere.
And we will read your letter potentially, even on air.
We'll,
and
we'll read it. We might read it out loud, too. That's possible.
Yes. We're not necessarily, you know, there's no, like, auto reply or anything. Just send it. And know that it will be read by a human. That we can promise you.
Is that really the comfort?
That's the
people?
Bar.
That's
the
what
bar
people
is,
want to hear.
The bar is way down there.
Okay. Other stations say AI will read your letter, and a human will not
that's
go anywhere
the
near it.
That's what you get with community radio.
Is humans.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Controversial, but good.
It's 2026.
It is.
It's where we are.
God,
that's
God,
the selling
us.
Point. Support community radio. Every now and then we do fundraisers. I believe we finished up the spring fundraiser, which was quite good. I think it was okay. We got close.
Well, we didn't meet the full goal.
We didn't meet the full goal.
If you feel guilty about that, then go to WUSB.FM and click on the pledge section and pledge a healthy amount, and maybe we'll feel a little bit better. You know, it's... no calls, no pledges, no, come on, people, let's wake up. 802-321-4225. We're not asking for money right now.
No, we just wanted to have a chat, hear, someone else's opinion about the movie Sentimental Value.
The phone is ringing. It's a miracle. You know, and that happened the same time.
I'm answering.
The same time I saw a news story, the headline, Senate advances resolution to limit Trump's Iran war powers for first time after four Republicans defect.
Oh, well, finally.
Two miracles happened in the same second. Wow. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Go ahead.
Well, miracles happen. Hello there.
Yes.
The radio on.
Yes, please
hey,
turn me down.
Big
thank you.
Guys big fan of your show, by the way.
Thank you. Where are you calling? Can I ask where you're calling from?
Suffolk County.
Okay. Vague enough.
I don't want to incriminate myself.
Yeah, don't blow up the spot. Nah.
It's already too late, but
go ahead.
Go ahead. What's on your mind?
Voice recognition. They could probably just know who I am for my voice.
Oh, they're on their way.
Do you guys think we're close to the singularity, or have we crossed it?
Oh, you know what? That's something that has not yet come up for us. I don't know if it would be a good thing or a bad thing at this stage. I'm kind of in the middle, you know, because we're doing such an awful job on our own.
He didn't ask if it was a good thing or a bad thing.
I know.
He just
asked
if we think that we're coming up on it. And I think we're probably already in the midst of it.
Look at how
fast.
That's
not controversial, though, right?
Look at how fast AI has crept up on us.
Just in 2 or 3 years, the language models, definitely it is upon us. The fact that it has convinced the markets, by that I mean humans that benefit from its development, have been convinced by it that it must retool construction on the planet to become basically giant ovens for silicon processors, you know, data centers. So, like, yeah, that, like, energy and everything is going to go all the way around and be fueling bigger and badder robots and machines instead of benefiting mankind, and we have to do that first. That seems a little bit singularity adjacent. So we're definitely in the neighborhood.
Wild.
Yeah, we only have a minute or so left, but tell us what you think in that minute.
Well, I haven't brushed up on my Ray Kurzweil in a while, but I think his daughter wrote another book, like another singularity book. He's familiar with Ray Kurzweil, I'm guessing, right?
Not as much as I should be.
But he's like the guy, I think he coined the term singularity, and
okay.
You know, he's like the main singularity philosopher, scientist guy out there.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, I haven't read up on it in a while, like in a couple of years, but I thought maybe you guys could shed some light. And you did.
Okay, well, happy we served that purpose. Thanks for the call, and are you driving?
I'm driving. I'm working as I'm driving.
Okay, well, be careful driving, because a lot of people out there are crazy.
Thank you, guys.
Can you
it.
Can okay, you thanks. Can you share a title with us?
Singularity is Near. I think it's the name of Ray Kurzweil's first book.
Great.
And he either wrote a second one, or his daughter wrote a third one, or there's a few.
Okay.
Great. Okay.
Well, thanks for giving us something to look into, and thanks for that call. And you know what? We're out of time. Those 2 hours blew by. I want to go out though with something kind of special that I've never heard on the radio. You guys familiar with the White Album by the Beatles? You know, side four is kind of crazy. They have a song called Revolution 1, and then it goes into other songs, then Revolution 9, the crazy one goes backwards and all. This is how it was all laid out. So you'll hear different parts of all those songs together. And if you've never heard this before, it really is remarkable. And it gives us 11 minutes to breathe. So I want to thank everybody for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday, 6 to 7, on WUSB. Stay tuned to WUSB Stony Brook, and have a good night. Bye.
Listen, I am one of two.
Don't worry.
Take your knickers off and let's go.
As you said.
Every bit of revolution
takes 20. Revolution
yeah,
20.
music is that?
Too much.
Ah, great.